This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Healthy Aging, providing you with the unique energy support of Pure NT Factor. NT Factor is the only nutritional formula clinically proven to reduce fatigue, whatever the cause, whether it be age, illness, or just being run down. NT Factor from Nutritional Therapeutics repairs damaged cells and restores healthy bacteria in your digestive tract. Clinical trials have shown NT Factor reduces fatigue by almost half, and it even reverses some symptoms of aging. I've been taking NT Factor for years with a 45-day money-back guarantee of nothing to lose. To order, call 800-982-9158. That's 800-982-9158. Or go to ntfactor.com. That's ntfactor.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and here we are once again. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla. It's an opportunity for you to pose questions to us, and we'll endeavor to answer them to the best of our ability. Your questions can be sent to radioprogram@AOL.com. So with me today is Layla Mutin, who's our nutritionist in residence. She's a registered dietitian, has a master's degree in the field of nutrition, and we work as a team in our practice here in Manhattan. How are you doing?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman. How are you?
Very well, thank you. So, radioprogram@AOL.com is the destination for questions. We have quite a few today that we'll answer in just a moment. But before we get to that, I'd like to share a very important study with you. And it has to do with hypertension. Now, we know that there's a problem in this country because there's a lot of people walking around with sky-high blood pressure, and they're not doing anything about it.
Yeah.
And so untreated high blood pressure can lead to strokes. Yes. It can actually accelerate cognitive decline. Mm-hmm. It can ultimately put a strain on the heart, enlarge the heart, cause congestive heart failure. Mm-hmm. It's a bad thing. Mm-hmm. It can put pressure on the kidneys. It's actually one of the most common causes of kidney failure along with diabetes, especially when you have a double whammy, diabetes and hypertension. There's a lot of people getting inadequate treatment for their hypertension.
Yeah.
So along came this thing called the SPRINT trial, and I wrote about this extensively a few months ago. Remember, I wrote a series of articles about hypertension and the new guidelines.
When the new guidelines
much came more stringent out. Guidelines. It's like, it used to be like, they used the term borderline blood pressure. And borderline meant, okay, it's borderline, you don't have to get treated, but it's borderline, you know, heads up. And that was like anywhere from, 130 to 140 over 85 to 90 was borderline, something along those lines. I don't know exactly, but, you know, you get the idea. So they then revised that to be a form of hypertension.
Yes.
But in the article, buried in the guidelines, is, and not mentioned very emphatically, but mentioned, is that those people should be treated with lifestyle.
Yeah.
Preferentially to drugs.
Absolutely.
But most doctors are very literal. They say, well, that's hypertension. So they treat them with drugs.
Ah, yes.
And most doctors also think that people are kind of spazzy and they don't really follow directions. They're not going to respond.
They're not going to change their diet and exercise.
Yeah. I mean, how many times you said to a patient, lose weight, you know, eat less junk, you know, don't have as much sodium.
Yeah.
It doesn't work. So forget about it. Let's keep them safe. We'll put them on meds.
Mm-hmm.
So this is actually the first study of its kind to examine what the effects are of this intervention. Benefits and harms of any hypertensive treatment in low-risk patients with mild hypertension.
Hmm.
So what they're looking at here is somebody comes to the doctor's office and they don't have heart disease. By the way, you know, I think people who've had a stroke or have had a heart attack or have kidney failure or have heart failure, they need more aggressive treatment for blood pressure because they're at risk. But let's say, you know, Joe Blow, he's 50, comes in, blood pressure's a little high. You know, maybe he's a couple pounds overweight, but he's not diabetic. He's not, you know, none of those major league things. So he's at, you know, considered mild, you know, low risk for heart disease and stroke.
Mm-hmm.
But in this study, they looked at patients aged 18 to 74, who had mild hypertension. That's defined as untreated blood pressure of 140 over 90 up to 159 over 99, which is pretty high.
Yeah.
Now, pretty much those people get treated. Yeah. They get treated with medication.
Yeah. Okay.
So let's ask a very fundamental question. Does it help?
Hmm.
And it gets the blood pressure down.
Sure. It should, right?
It will. It'll get the blood. So then you come to the doctor's office. Doctor's happy. Look, your blood pressure is doing much better. Great. But the objective was to find out whether any hypertensive treatment is associated with a lower risk of mortality and cardiovascular disease. Well, isn't that what we're after?
Yeah, that's the objective.
Less risk of dying.
Yeah.
And less risk of having a heart attack.
Because high blood pressure is a risk factor of that.
So you would think, I mean, that's the whole rationale, right? Mm-hmm. You would think that that should make a difference because that's what we do. We use you check your blood pressure, get it under control. So what did they find? This is what they found. The rates of mortality, cardiovascular disease, and adverse events among patients prescribed any hypertensive treatment for mild hypertension, and it wasn't so mild because it
wasn't
be
so mild.
It could be up to 159 over 99.
Yeah, that's 160 over 100. Let's just call it that. Yeah.
No difference in the rate of dying or cardiovascular disease, but there were actually some downsides to that. They actually found that there was increased risk of some adverse events, which included falls, episodes of low blood pressure, weak and woozy, and even you can impair kidney function when you do that. And plus, some elderly people, when you drop their blood pressure too much, they get brain brownouts. They get like episodes of
low oxygen.
Low blood flow. They got stiffened arteries, and then the blood doesn't flow to their brain.
Right. Therefore, not delivering the oxygen.
So, any health professionals out there listening to this, it's going to change the way that you practice medicine is that maybe, just maybe, you're going to hold the blood pressure medications for a while and urge people to change their lifestyle. Because, by the way, I think one of the reasons why hypertension is associated with cardiovascular disease risk is because it's a marker for insulin resistance, obesity, sedentary lifestyle, poor diet. So you fix the number, but you don't take care of the sedentary lifestyle, the diet, the obesity, the insulin. You just fix the blood pressure, and people die at the same rate. But the better blood pressure, but they die.
right.
What that calls for is we should pay attention to those people.
Yes.
But we should target them for intensive lifestyle intervention.
Yeah. Wow.
Very profound, I think.
You know, I didn't realize that low blood pressure can actually impair the kidneys.
Think about it. You know, you live in New York City, as I do, and you live in an apartment building. Mm-hmm. What happens when all your neighbors are taking a shower?
Oh, low.
Low. And low like blood. The water comes trickling, especially sometimes when they use a lot of cold water.
Yes.
Then the hot water comes on and you get like scalded and it starts to jump and you like turn on the hot cold.
Right.
Does that happen to you?
Sure.
That's what happens with
about 7 a.m.
too much blood pressure medication.
Yeah.
Not enough blood gets to the brain.
Huh. Well, that's dangerous, all right.
Yeah, especially if your pipes are stiffer. Mm. They don't accommodate to the changes in pressure. And older people, but
they're going to have stiffer pipes.
Stiffer pipes.
Yeah. Yeah. Very interesting. And not to mention, you know, weak and woozy, brownouts, syncope.
And when it's consequential, because if an older person, say in a blood thinner, falls and hits their head, there could be a goner. They could be a goner because they'll get an intracerebral bleed, intracranial bleeding. The other thing that can happen is they can break a hip.
Yes.
That kind of fainting episode can be devastating,
And a hip fracture at a certain age can be.
So
mortality.
Can be a fatal event.
Be a fatal event, yeah.
So it's not inconsequential. I mean, you think, these medications are mild, what is the rate at which people over 50 in this country are on blood pressure medication? I think half of people over 50 are on blood pressure medication.
Probably.
Now, this is not to say too many people are unnecessarily on blood pressure medication.
Yeah.
And not enough people who need blood pressure medication are on blood pressure medication.
That's true, too. Wow. So
let's get the word out. So, I mean, if every doctor in America really paid heed to the implications of this, we would see a lot of improvement in the health of America. Just putting them on blood pressure medication isn't making one jot of difference in the outcome for this population, the low-risk population.
18 to 74-year-olds.
Who do not have other conditions which mm-hmm. for which you really need blood pressure medication.
Yeah. Well, this is an important study, hopefully. What journal is this in?
JAMA.
Well,
actually, in one of their publications, I can see here what publication of theirs it is in. It's the JAMA Network, so it means maybe one of their publications.
Hmm.
It's in the JAMA Internal Medicine, which is pretty good.
Yeah. Okay.
That's what all internal medicine doctors should be paying attention to. I hope they share this with med students and residents in hospitals.
Hopefully.
During their training.
Hopefully. Another thing is, to bring it up again, and I still see it too often, that blood pressure is not being taken correctly.
Right.
In doctor's offices. If you're sitting on the exam table and your feet are dangling, mm-hmm. that is not the time to take your blood pressure. You should also empty your bladder before your blood pressure is taken. Your arm that the blood pressure cuff is on should be supported either by leaning against a desk or, you know, but up in the area of the heart, or being supported by the practitioner taking your blood pressure, kind of like under their arm or something. So these are the things that need to be taken into consideration.
And also I would say that people would do well to check their blood pressure at home because it's some people have white coat syndrome.
Yeah.
And their blood pressure monitors that are available for home use.
Right, right.
That
yes.
are pretty accurate and, mm-hmm. and idiot-proof.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, important information. Wow. Okay, on to questions.
On to questions, please.
We have an email from Brad. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. I've been following a modified paleo diet for several years, occasionally including basmati or wild rice. Out of curiosity, do you have any opinions on the carnivore, the zero-carb diet? Which was a fad for a little while, but I think the doctor that was touting it, his medical license was taken away.
Oh, really? Okay.
Or something. I didn't grab the doctor's name.
Yeah, I didn't know that there was a specific doctor.
Yeah, just eat meat.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is ridiculous. No, Brad.
Was it raw meat?
Yeah.
It have to be raw meat?
Steak tartare is delicious.
Yeah, but your chicken tartare is probably not the greatest idea.
No.
That's a good way to get salmonella or
maybe die.
Campylobacter or something.
Right. No, Brad, not a great idea. And by the way, a zero-carb diet is practically impossible. Meat will have some...
And by the way...
Iota of...
With all that protein, mm-hmm. you're going to get some carbohydrates.
Exactly. It's going to go into blood sugar.
Gluconeogenesis.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. You don't want all that protein.
Right.
Exactly. Well, and if you're somebody with impaired kidney function, you can't have all that protein.
Right.
Anyway, not
right.
that much.
Right.
Which is a ridiculous amount of protein.
Yeah, even a ketogenic
diet
is going to be more based on fat
yes.
and include some roughage. You must have roughage in the
yeah.
diet because the fiber is essential for your microbiome. Your microbiome
yes.
is going to do really badly on
it. It's got nothing to feed on.
You know what? I saw this very interesting thing on the Neanderthals on PBS.
Mm-hmm.
They did a very good job because they tried to reconstruct the Neanderthals mm-hmm. based on fossil evidence. And, you know, what they said was they actually showed the Neanderthals killing a mastodon
uh-huh.
in the forest and, you know, devouring it. You know, they were so hungry that they were literally devouring its flesh.
Wow.
You know, they didn't take the time to take it back to the camp and cook it.
Although hungry
they
now.
They were just, you know.
Low blood sugar
said,
now.
They said, very interesting. They said, right, they're hangry. They were
they're hangry.
They
were hangry.
And they didn't have a Snickers bar, so they
no.
eat a mammoth. You know, or a mastodon
yes.
or something, one of these, you know, uh-huh. woolly tusked things. So, but what they said is that they got vegetation. Why? Because they ate the intestines. It sounds a little icky.
Oh.
But they actually preferentially ate the intestines where they got sort of like a sauerkraut, partially digested
vegetable plant matter.
Material.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That, so they ate sweetbreads.
In effect. Yeah. Yeah. In effect.
Right?
Or
yeah.
as in the Yiddish, uh-huh. You know, cuisinary lexicon, uh-huh. kishkes.
Kishkes.
Stuffed kishkes.
Yeah. Or what's the Scottish one? Haggis?
Haggis. Right.
Right, 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 right.
Every culture
so they,
has that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So they had some, quote, sauerkraut with their meat.
Yeah.
Or
so
some
they,
kind
they got,
of vegetable
that's
matter.
One of the ways they got vegetation, especially in a time where in the winter, and many of them lived in that subarctic area because the glaciers had advanced, mm-hmm. and they had a great deal of resilience to cold temperatures,
mm-hmm.
and they hunted wild animals there. So how were they going to get their fiber? They weren't going to necessarily find it in in these icy, wintry environments, but they actually got it from the animals that foraged.
That foraged
on
for
leaves
it.
Or
on roots.
On grasses. Actually, I was recently in a museum in Albany, and I was looking at, they have a reconstructed mastodon from, that was found in New York State, by the way.
Wow.
Which is interesting. Do you realize that much of New York State was covered by ice 1.5 miles thick? 1.5 miles thick.
Miles thick?
We weren't just talking about like 6 feet of snow cover on the ground. We're talking about glaciers covering the entire state mostly. And even
wow.
Long Island was carved by glaciers. So there was quite a lot of glaciation, very cold temperatures. And they were mastodons that were roaming this subarctic area. And the difference between a mammoth, I didn't know the difference between a mammoth and a mastodon. Well, first of all, the woolly mammoth is woolly.
Mm-hmm.
But the mammoth subsisted on tough grasses, and the mastodon subsisted on leaves.
Leaves.
And they had different teeth, so they could tell that by their teeth shape that what they subsisted on.
Wow.
Anyway, just a little bit of a factoid. But it has to do with our dietary predilections, what we evolved to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And we're all, you know, small percentage Neanderthal, virtually all of us. We have some Neanderthal in us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's the, you know, the unibrow and
that
low
ridge.
Forehead. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And broad nose and, you know, and according to my 23andMe, I'm a little bit more Neanderthal than the average populace.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Which
my husband a little bit.
Things.
He's got that.
Explains a lot of things.
You Neanderthal.
Right.
Oh, my goodness. So, no, following a zero-carb diet, Brad, is not a great idea. That excess protein is going to turn to blood sugar. If you already have compromised kidney function, this is a very big problem. And you can't just eat like that. It's boring.
Well, you know,
it's
actually, there's a historical experiment for that. Is Lewis and Clark.
Mm-hmm.
And they have very detailed accounts of what they ate during the trip. And when it got to be winter, all they had was game. Just game. No vegetables. They ran out of their supplies.
Yeah.
They had no canned foods or anything for the era of and a hardtack. They had used up their preserved foods. So they did have one thing.
Hmm.
They had a lot of ammo, and they had good guns, and they had very tame animals that had never seen humans with guns.
Oh.
So, yeah, you know.
So they didn't know to feel danger.
They weren't gun shy.
Yeah.
And so they were just bagging like deer and moose and, you know, left and right and bison. And they actually recorded that each man ate 6 to 7 pounds of meat per day.
Wow.
And they said that they were constantly voraciously hungry.
Mm.
But they were also doing enormous amounts of physical work.
That's true.
They were
too.
Literally schlepping their boats. They were traversing their boats, you know, from one riverway to another when they ran
game
out.
Game meat is also very little fat. So unless they were eating the organs specifically.
They did eat the
they
organs.
They had to be starved. They had to.
Yeah.
I mean, that's otherwise.
They wanted fat. They did not trim the fat because the fat was like more energy, more nutrition.
More calories.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So,
interesting stuff.
Yeah.
Wow. Brad actually has a follow-up question. Brad says, I'm a 48.
Is the question what to do for severe constipation?
No, that's coming.
No fiber.
No fiber. That would be good. I'm a 48-year-old natural bodybuilder. My goal is to gain muscle. I'm very health conscious. Do protein powders have a place in a fitness program? If you believe in their efficacy, what's the type to take?
Well, the answer is for most ordinary mortals, no. Because I think it's kind of a hype, and you know they sell enormous vats of these things at GNC and food stores with pictures of bodybuilders with bulging muscles. And most people can't really exercise that intensely require so much protein for muscle building.
Right.
But perhaps maybe very, very intense bodybuilders
may benefit
some
from
additional,
that.
Building blocks for muscle growth.
That could be helpful. Like maybe in a whey protein, an egg protein, or even a vegetarian type protein.
Or
the branched chain amino acids, leucine, isoleucine, valine, these are good. But you'll get the same from a steak and some broccoli or some chicken or some fish and some vegetables.
I think it's very
good. Go eat a meal.
Hey,
go
you
eat
know,
a meal.
I'm going to interview a guy who wrote the textbook of sports medicine. and I'll probably interview him next month.
Uh-huh.
So I'll put that question to him.
Yeah.
Specifically.
Where does protein...
But he's really about the science of sports medicine, not about like trying to promote, you know, some pseudoscientist. They'll write something on a website and they'll say, click here, you know, to buy this magical muscle-building formula.
Right.
But, you know, the true science of it, based on studies, we'll have to see. We'll have to evaluate.
Yeah. Brad, I would say to you, there's a 45 to 60 minute window after your strength training workout to eat. That's the optimal time to eat. Mm-hmm. So go eat some chicken and vegetables or steak and a salad or something like that. You'll get plenty of...
Is it advisable to have some carbs with that meal?
Sure.
Because the carbs will spare the protein because the protein won't be fully utilized for carbohydrate.
Have a sweet potato with that or something. Or have a banana for dessert after that. That's perfectly fine. And you could spare it, and maybe you want to regain some glycogen after your workout, depending on your fitness level, you know. Are you trim? Are you, you know. I've seen bodybuilders who are fat.
I had a new source of protein the other day. I had, after workout, I had eggs with duck bacon. Have you ever had duck bacon?
Yum. No, I didn't.
It actually tastes really good. It's bacony, but a little different. And I think it should alleviate some concerns. Some people don't want to eat pork, you know. I presume it could be kosher.
Salmon skin bacon.
Mm-hmm. Mm. That's good too. Mm-hmm.
Duck bacon. That sounds delicious. Yep. I love duck. All right. So, Brad, thank you for your questions. We have one from David. I started taking a supplement made by Nutrafol. That's Nutrafol. I heard about it from a podcast on Bulletproof, those coffee guys who drink buttered coffee or coffee with MCT oil. I wondered what you knew about it. I hope it's not like Balance of Nature questionable. And what Nutrafol is, I looked it up, is it's basically a formulation for hair regrowth. It has things like
biotin.
Yeah, the
follicle. Nutrafol. Yeah. It's Miracle-Gro for your hair. It's like the plant, you know, thing you put in your plants and they grow.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't believe in the Miracle-Gro theory for hair. I believe that hair is really not about nutrition mostly.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's got some vitamins and it's got some zinc. You know, zinc is thought to be helpful for growth. And okay, fine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got some salt palmetto. And salt palmetto is a little bit of a, it's a mimic of the medications that block the bad testosterone.
Mm-hmm.
So it could maybe have an impact on male pattern baldness, but there's not been any studies on that. You know, just like,
And the time to start taking salt palmetto
like
for
Avodart,
anything
like
that.
Avodart. Or, you know, okay. Something like that.
Okay.
But, you know, if you really want that effect, you should take the Avodart. It's got some collagen, but, you know, is the collagen going to go to your hair follicles? I don't know. It's got some ashwagandha. I never knew ashwagandha made you hairy. It's got some curcumin, and I guess if your hair loss is based on an inflammatory thing, maybe curcumin is okay, but, and it's got some tocotrienols, but I never knew that tocotrienols make your hair grow, or hyaluronic acid. It's got some cysteine, and we know that amino acids, are part and parcel of, you know, the hair is rich in those amino acids, but it doesn't mean that this is going to get to your hair. So keratin, you know, it's an ingredient that you get from hair.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's hype.
So the answer would be what? Propecia?
Look, the
Rogaine.
Here, this company is right here, 28 West 27th Street.
Oh.
Nutrafol.com.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's wishful thinking.
And, you know, many people start those hair supplements too late.
Are not bad or toxic in this.
Yeah, yeah, they're not.
I mean, it's kind of,
couldn't be
it makes a good
harmful.
Story, but it doesn't, I mean, has it been tested as something that really helps hair? I don't think it will.
Isn't the time to take something like that or like salt palmetto, or do you remember the Chinese herb He Shou Wu?
He Shou Wu.
That one is a liver tonic and touted to keep the hair on your head or keep it from turning gray.
It's a vitality formula.
I think the time to take them.
Mr. Wu has dark hair or something.
The time to start taking it is much earlier in your life, not when you start complaining of.
If indeed it works.
Baldness. You know. If indeed it works.
Yeah.
Right.
And once you're bald, I mean, that's even less likelihood that's going to make it, you know, better. I mean, maybe salt palmetto has a somewhat of a preventive effect.
Mm.
I have good hair, and I've been taking salt palmetto for a long time for my prostate. Maybe it's helped my hair, but I don't know. I tend to think these things are more genetic.
Yeah, probably. Probably.
They're healthy men, super healthy men have hair loss. They're healthy in every respect, but they have hair loss.
But they have hair loss. That's it. Yeah.
It's not a sign of ill health.
No. No, not at all.
In some cases, it can be. I mean, if you have chemotherapy or if you have malnutrition or something, your hair, or you get very sick, your hair might thin and fall.
Get
very, hypothyroidism,
very
you know, that, then, okay. Mm-hmm. But is it a nutritional thing in a well-fed person? I don't think so.
Right, right. Okay. Thank you for your question, David. Oh, here's a good one from John. Dr. Hoffman and Layla, for someone that suffers from Raynaud's due to frostbite, do you have any suggestions?
I have a suggestion. Let's hold that over for part two.
For part two?
Because we're running out of time.
Oh, my gosh, already. Wow. Okay.
Time flies when you're having fun. In part two, we'll discuss that question. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman today with Layla Mutin, our destination for questions, radio program at AOL.com, and we'll be right back.